The second I mentioned one of the obscure things left in the back seat of an Uber was goalie pads, that someone was going to say, and it's Sheldon from Ituna, goalie pads left in the back of an Uber in Edmonton? Probably Stuart Skinner's. More likely he left them on purpose, didn't need those colors anymore. Sheldon, thanks for the text. Okay, this is a topic that we have been following. One of the biggest stories, actually, in Canadian agriculture right now is the whole restructuring of Monette Farms, one of North America's largest farming operations. We've been following this one closely. It's a mega farm, could have huge implications for small farmers and rural communities across Saskatchewan. The company is seeking to pay down what is roughly a $1 billion basically debt through court-supervised process that could see hundreds of thousands of acres of farmland sold across Western Canada and the United States. It's a big story. It's one that has lots of people talking, especially people in rural Saskatchewan, to understand the implication, the bigger picture of this. I'm happy to welcome to the show Andre Magnan, who is a sociology professor at the University of Regina, whose research focuses on agriculture, farmland ownership, the changing structure of the agri-food system. And he's been following the Monette Farm story closely, and we've got him joining us by phone today. Professor, thank you so much for taking our call.
Happy to be here.
So maybe just talk a little bit about your background. What is the type of research and study that you focused on?
Sure. Well, I was trained as a rural sociologist, and one of the big questions that we ask in rural sociology is sort of how is agriculture evolving and what is the connection between agriculture and rural communities? And there's a really interesting debate that goes back many decades now about, you know, what would happen to agriculture over decades of capitalist development, essentially modern development, and will we still have family farms in a generation or two? And so it's actually a really fascinating area to study, because agriculture has been a bit exceptional. We still have many, many thousands of family farms. And yes, there's consolidation and corporatization, and those things are happening, but there's still, I think, a lively debate about whether these huge corporate farms can succeed where family farms have been around and been quite resilient and quite successful for many decades.
So let's talk about Monette, which of course is a very big player when it comes to agriculture in the province. Maybe just start with your thoughts, Professor, on how this has been unfolding the last couple of months. Is this a surprise to you?
It isn't in a certain sense. I think the surprise element for me was this seemed like such a rapid expansion, and it seemed like, Monette was kind of taking over the world. So I think everyone was really impressed at the scale and the speed at which it was doing that scaling up, and me included. On the other hand, when I think about it, there are some examples going back 10 or 15 years and then in previous decades of big mega farms failing as well, right? So going back around 15 years, there was quite a large operation called Wigmore Farms, and that reached, I think, close to 100,000 acres, but it kind of failed in a spectacular way back then. There was something called One Earth Farms, which was a really interesting sort of entity that had some financial backing from Bay Street, but also lots of First Nations participation, and they had really big ambitions to grow it to 200,000 acres or larger. And so again, it was really interesting. People were following it closely, but ultimately that failed as well. So there's some history here of some of these really large operations going bust. But you never know which one might succeed and might last over the long term.
So, I mean, that kind of has me wondering, Professor, is, you know, can a farm be too big? If you think about it, I'm a farm kid myself, born and raised on a very small Saskatchewan family farm, and I know the problems and I know the pitfalls of farming, a lot of which are out of the control of farmers. Yeah. Is there is it a scalable problem that farmers face as the bigger the farm gets? Can farms be too big?
I think that's the open question. I do think that there are big challenges that come with operating on this massive scale that that Monet was attempting to do. First of all, you're spread out over this massive geographic area. You know, in the case of Monet, they had to borrow quite aggressively to get to the size that they got. So that was obviously a huge risk. And then I think one of the disadvantages of these super large operations is the kind of decision-making chain, because in a family farm, in a smaller operation, you know, the workers and the principals are often one and the same people. And so there is a notion that family farms can be more nimble, they can react more quickly, they are more resilient in certain ways, I think, when it comes to tough times and challenges. So when you're starting to layer that complexity of a large corporation onto something that is as risky and unpredictable as agriculture, I think that's where some of the weaknesses of this model of mega farming actually come into play.
Professor Andre Magnan is my guest, professor of sociology and social studies at the University of Regina. Maybe let's just talk about where things are at with Monet Farms now. We know about the creditor protection. We know about the nearly $1 billion in loans. Now we're at a liquidation phase. It sounds like there's a lot of acres that are going up for sale. Am I right?
That's absolutely right. So what we learned recently was that Monet is seeking to sell off all of its farmland, which is a really big portfolio, 129,000 acres in Saskatchewan alone. And that would be through a kind of court-supervised process. And they're looking to make these sales in somewhat of an expedited process. So my understanding is that they've asked the judge to allow them to sell packages of land up to $30 million under this sort of expedited process, and my understanding is it wouldn't require a full sort of hearing in front of the judge for some of those sales. So it seems to me that, yes, they're liquidating all of their land, and they're trying to do it relatively quickly. I think the goal is to get much of that, or if not all of it, done by the fall, October or November.
So I'm really curious to your thoughts on the implications of this, because on one hand, you've got lots of people in the ag sector. Sometimes it's individual farmers, sometimes it's co-ops in small communities, and at other times it's larger financial institutions that are owed money by Monet. And so yeah, this liquidation might hopefully yield to those debts being paid or those loans being paid. But on the other hand, you're going to have a ton of people looking for likely money to be able to go out and purchase this land. So how does that equilibrium work in the province?
Yeah, it's a great question because, well, the farmland market is unlike most other markets. You know, it's I did some research about 10 years ago to try and figure out sort of what was the turnover rate for farmland in the province. And at that time, it was around 2 to 3 million acres per year. So that 129,000 acres that Monet is trying to sell this year, it's not a huge chunk necessarily of that market. It could be up to about 5% of what typically gets sold in a year. I think that the effects are going to be localized. It'll really matter, you know, where are these bigger packages of land being sold? And I'm not sure what to think about how that's going to unfold. Is it going to support farmland prices if there are a lot of bidders, or is it potentially going to depress farmland prices if Monet is really looking to exit pretty quickly? But that's another kind of unusual thing about the farmland market, is that the dynamics are often very, very localized, and even, as I'm sure you know, average farmland values can vary dramatically depending on which part of the province that we're looking at.
Do you know, Professor, if a lot of this land that's up for sale outside, if we include the land outside of the province, I think it's 274,000 acres of land for sale, has a lot of it been seeded this year?
Well, I think it has. I don't know if there's been any really detailed reporting about how much has been seeded, but you'll recall that back in, I think it was April or May, they got a sort of emergency action to get quite a substantial loan to finance putting a crop in the ground, right? So the thinking was that with the financial pressure there, if they weren't able to put a crop in the ground, that would cause all kinds of downstream problems with weeds and other things. So I believe they were able to secure that financing so that they're able to put a crop in the ground, but I haven't heard anything about exactly how that's gone or whether it's all been seeded, but I suspect that the large majority of it has been.
Mm-hmm. Professor Andre Magnan is my guest. What is the takeaway for Saskatchewan farmers, whether you're, you know, working for a bigger farming organization or you're running a smaller, humble family farm? Is there a takeaway that kind of bleeds through all different sizes of farm and egg productions in the province?
I think one of the takeaways for me is that family farms are really very efficient and very good at what they do, and they're resilient, and I don't see any reason to worry that they're going to disappear anytime soon. These really, you know, these big mega farms and these other interesting models that come along are interesting to watch, of course, but it's clear to me that family farms do a lot of things really well, and that there's a kind of a built-in resiliency there when the people are on the land, they own the land, they're fully invested in the business of agriculture, and they're often really invested in the community as well. So to me, I think one of the takeaways.
Okay, I appreciate your time today, Andre. Thanks for the check-in.
You're welcome.
That is Andre Magnan. He's a professor of sociology, social studies at the University of Regina. He's got an interest in the sociology that is involved in agri-food systems. And as we watch the Minette Farms situation continue to play out, lots of farmland on the market for sale and will be over the next little while. We will continue to keep an eye on this. And thank you to the people that are joining in on the conversation on the text line as well. Lots of interest for sure on this situation in the province, because it impacts many people for many different reasons. And I think there's a keen interest in this because we've watched the growth of Minette Farms. And so now it's understanding what this looks like and what the implications will be during what appears to be a winding down of that company. You're listening to 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I look at the text line, and since Brian Lilly was on this morning just after 9 o'clock, we've had a lot of people weighing in on whether or not we should keep the CRTC in Canada. They regulate basically broadcasting in Canada and have done so for a number of years. Many people suggesting that they have lost touch with what modern media looks like through social media, through streaming platforms, internet platforms as well. We talked a bit about that with Brian this morning, the direction the CRTC is going and the role the federal government plays in that direction.
This is bad policy that, by the way, they're trying to say, well, this is the CRTC's decision, not ours. The CRTC acted based upon instructions from the Liberal government. And on the side, that part of this that deals with the American trade issues, they've been warned since 2023 when they first proposed this by the Biden administration, you can't do what you're planning on doing. It's a violation of CUSMA, and, you know, we will retaliate. Donald Trump got in. He said the same thing. But this is a bad policy for Canada's broadcasters as well. And normally when I'm on a broadcaster governed by the CRTC, like your radio stations, people get nervous. The last while, people have been willing to let me speak about this. This idea that we're going to pay for Canadian content by increasing the costs on, well, Ralco, on CTV, on Global, is a horrible way. If we're going to decide as a country that we want to subsidize Canadian content, we should just do a straight-up subsidy. Instead, what we've been saying to CTV is, the CRTC has been saying, you give us 30 to 45% of your revenue, not your profit, but your revenue, and we'll decide where it goes to fund Canadian content. Well, they said in this latest decision, we'll drop that down to 25%. We're going to be good guys, and we'll drop it down to 25%. But now we're going to bring the streamers in, and they have to pay 15%. The Canadian streamers, like Crave, had to pay 25% under this. But yeah. Netflix only 15% of the revenue. It was bad for so many reasons. from the trade to what it did to, would do to consumers, your bills would go up, to distorting the economy. It even said it changed the rules so that sports couldn't be considered Canadian content. So the Jays game that I was at Friday night, where they lost 13-3, horrible game, but it's broadcast in Canada, from Canada, Canadian production crew, Canadian hosts, that would not be considered Canadian content. Neither would a Leafs-Habs game, for goodness sakes, or a Oilers-Flames game. Oh, that's not Canadian content. It's such a horrible decision. The CRTC should be dismantled, in my opinion, because they don't have a clue what they're about any of the industries they're regulating, and we just put them in charge of the internet.
Well, like I say, that sparked a number of texts on the text line. If you wanted to hear the whole conversation with Brian Lilly, you can always go back to our website and see that. On the topic, we just touched on these things that are found left in Uber vehicles. I see a text from Calvin saying a few years ago, he and his wife were headed to California, had a connecting flight in Denver. Long story short, I lost my passport in the airport. I went to put it on my inside pocket and later learned it's not an inside pocket and their bottom wasn't even sewn shut. After a lot of panicking, I heard our last name over the intercom to customer service. As we approached, the person said, "Yep, you look familiar," and handed me my passport. My wife no longer allows me to hold my passport when traveling. Yeah, those are the consequences. I'm sure there was some panic there for sure, Calvin. Thank you for the text. Thanks to everyone who's texting in their thoughts on forgetting something behind, losing something, or forgetting it in an Uber. It happens for sure. That's why the story came out with the 2026 most left items in Ubers across Canada. Okay, when we come back, we've been talking about some of the violence and the challenges happening in the northern part of our province. Pelican Narrows, of course, really highlighting that over the last week and a half with the murder that happened up there. The Saskatchewan Marshals play a role in this. We had a talk with their chief, Rob Cameron, off the start of the show today. We revisit part of that conversation next here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME.